Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest tonight grew up in Little Falls, New York, served in World War II, and earned a master's degree in economics from the University of Michigan. In 1959, he joined Chrysler Corporation, became its president in 1970, and its chairman in 1975. He's the man who hired Lee Iacocca in 78 to help save Chrysler, and they spent 2 years attempting to get the bailout loan from the U.S. government for Chrysler. His name, John Ricardo, and I'm Jack Rasula. And this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything Is Possible with Jack Rasula, sponsored by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're with Mr. John Ricardo, the former president and chairman of Chrysler. John, welcome. It's an honor to have you.
Thank you.
Can we start by talking about your childhood and your parents?
Sure. I was born in a small town of Little Falls, New York, and on July 2nd of 1924. My parents were Italian immigrants. My dad had come over to the United States as a boy of 16 in the year 1900. His father had just died, leaving a widow and five children. My father came to the United States to earn money to send back to Italy to support his family. He worked here in basically in the Mohawk Valley of Utica, New York, mostly in woolen shops where they made sweaters and things of that sort. He did that for about 11 years and then went back to Italy, married my mother, who was 11 years his junior, and came back to the United States about 1911, 1912. Neither of them ever returned back to Italy. They raised six children, one of whom died of diphtheria in 1916 or 18, something in that area. But I had five siblings that I grew up with, all of whom are dead now except my one sister. It was a very ethnic community. We had a lot of Italians, we had a lot of Poles, we had a lot of people from the Ukraine, we had a lot of Irish, and each of them were really a separate group by themselves. Even though the town was small, there were a lot of ethnic groups. My dad was a very interesting man, had very little formal education and really no particular work skills, but he loved music, played the trumpet, and had a lot of good organizing skills. He actually formed and directed five marching bands, each of different ethnic group, and they used to play for band concerts, parades, the kinds of things they did in those days that were very popular. He had a great sense of humor.
What did you learn from your mom?
My mom was a very loving, compassionate, kind woman. She very religious, daily communicant. She's responsible for my religious formation. Just one incident I remember when I was about ready to go to the Army. I had to leave for the train station. She gave me a bear hug that I didn't think she was going to release me. I thought I was going to be AWOL my first day. Very loving and just as kind as she could be.
What kind of jobs did you have as a kid?
Well, they started me early. I started delivering newspapers. I can't recall exactly. I was six, seven in that area, eight maybe. And we'd bring the money home and give it to my mom and dad. That was our contribution to the family, because my dad was always worked in the factory. He didn't make any money, really, with these bands. It was mostly a work of love. I did that until I got into high school, I guess, and then I worked for a clothing store. I remember working. I used to get 25 cents an hour. I worked after schools and Saturdays. In between my junior and senior year, my father got me a job working in a bicycle factory. It was called Snyder Bikes. They used to sell them to Sears, I believe. I'm not sure exactly, but they used to make good bicycles. And my father used to bend handlebars. And that, in those days, they did it by hand. He had a lathe, a machine that he would put a bar in, and then he would pull it, and then he would switch it and pull the other half. He was a barrel-chested man, not very tall, but strong from having done this for 25 years. And he used to take his shirt off, and he used to call him the Big Bear. And so they put me in the next workstation over. I decided if my father took his shirt off, I should take mine off. I was promptly named the Little Bear. And I lasted 2 hours. At 10 o'clock, I decided I couldn't take it anymore. I went to my father and said, Pop, I can't do this job. It's too hard. He said, Son, I've been doing this for 25 years, and you haven't even lasted 2 hours. He said, take a lesson from this. If you don't want to do this, you better go to school. Make something of yourself. So that was a good lesson I learned.
Can you share with us your experiences in the Second World War?
Well, the Army being what it is, drafted me after I had this one semester of school in Albany, New York, and I had no driver's license. I never drove a car in civilian life, so I was put in a quartermaster truck company. I actually drove a semi-tractor trailer before I ever drove an automobile. I had some great experiences driving in India. I was stationed in India for 2.5 years, and after we captured a key town in Burma, we opened up the Burma Road into China, and we used to make trips over there. And we would drive trucks and then leave them in China and fly home.
We're talking to John Ricardo, who got a master's degree in economics from the U of M. When we come back, we'll talk to him about how he ever got to the U of M. I'm Jack Krasula. This is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
This is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR with Jack Krasula.
Welcome back. We're with John Ricardo, who got a master's degree in economics from the U of M. John, how did you ever get from New York and the Second World War to the U of M?
My oldest brother had graduated from the University of Michigan in 1937 or 38. He was the first of the three brothers, we were all in service, to come home from the service. Before I even got home, he had already sent in my application to the University of Michigan, and I was accepted before I even got off the boat and got back to my home. So I just went out to Ann Arbor with him. He went to get his master's degree, and I went to start my schooling.
After you graduate, you work for Touche Ross. And then in 59, you hire on with Chrysler. How did you get a job at Chrysler?
I worked for Touche for about 9 years. And the last couple of years that I was with Touche, I worked for one of the partners, but his name was Lynn Townsend. And he left Touche to go to Chrysler. Well, it wasn't as much fun to work at Touche anymore. I never really enjoyed the accounting business. And he said to me, if you ever get to Wanderlust, before you do anything, give me a call. Well, I lasted another 2 years and was about to be made a partner. But I decided to call my friend Townsend and told him what was happening. He said, I've got a job for you, so why don't you come to Chrysler? So I did. It was this hard decision for me to make because I passed up a partnership for life. But the excitement of going to run a business was very good for me. I really enjoyed that.
You hire on at Chrysler at 59, and 11 years later, 1970, you become the president. No sooner you take over, they have record losses, and you've got to convince Wall Street, shareholders, and your 230,000 people that we got to make major changes. How does a leader convince people to change, John?
Well, you got to understand that a lot of things happened between the time I went to Chrysler and the time I became president. I had any number of jobs. I actually spent 3 years in sales divisions. I visited dealers all across the country in all the major cities, and I did the same thing while I was in Canada, where I was before I went to the parent company. Canada was a microcosm of the parent company because we had everything but styling and engineering. And so it was good training for me to go there to the main office. Most of those employees were overseas. We had an awful lot of employees overseas, but we divested ourselves of them, as I will tell you later. And so even though we had 250,000 people at that time, we really became a North American company. When I became president, we were obviously in difficulty. Chrysler has had difficulties throughout, principally because being the smallest of the big three, this is a business of volume. Because whether you build one car or a million, you got to spend a certain amount of money for tooling. and equipment and plants and stamping plants and so forth. And so the lesser the volume, the more opportunities for losses. And that's, we didn't have the volume to sustain the number of people that we had employed. The thing that really triggered us, though, was the government put on a number of regulations in the 70s. Many of them were put on real early without us having enough opportunity to really design them, test them. And we couldn't cooperate with each other like our competitors could do because they didn't. We had antitrust laws and the Japanese did not. And this was another factor that caused us to have these losses that you're talking about, because we had to spend just enormous sums of money to do these things with the lesser volumes. And as a result, the pressure on our profits and our cash flow was very, very great. You know, we did the best we could, making everybody understand what the situation was, but the government really did hurt us, and that's why we went later to get some help.
In 1978, you hired Lee Iacocca. Why did you do that, and how was it you got him from Ford?
Well, as you well know, Lee was let go by Ford Company, and I found out about it when I was on vacation in Mexico. And the idea of hiring Lee was born down there in Mexico. When I came home, I started to contact Lee. And we had a number of discussions over a number of months. And it was obvious that Lee would like to stay in the automobile business, but not unless he had a top job. And we were desperate for help. We needed management help. And we were really in trouble. And so I offered Lee that I would give up the CEO position and he could have it in a year after he joined Chrysler. And we'd worry about the rest from there. So Lee came on board and as president and was there until the day I left, and then he took over as chairman.
On August 31st, 1979, you made a decision that you and Lee would take $1 salaries for the next 2 years. Why would you ever do that?
Well, actually, it was Lee's idea, and in agreement with, because we wanted to demonstrate to the public the confidence that we would be able to get the help from the government that we needed, and that we would not lose anything on the deal. We would, and hopefully it would give confidence to our shareholders, the Wall Street, our employees, customers, that we were going to be around.
Later that year in 79, at age 55, John Ricardo, you retire. Why?
I made untold visits to visit almost every congressman in Washington and every senator that I could get to, and the administration as high up as we could go. It was obvious to me that there were a lot of people who were not sold on this idea of helping Chrysler. It was something that would be a very novel thing to do. There was a lot of opposition to it. Had the Republicans been in power, I don't think anything would have happened, but the Democrats were in power, and as a result, there were more of them who were in favor of this than the Republicans might have been. But I received a visit from a senator that I knew very well, who wanted to see me desperately, urgently. So we had a one-on-one visit in my office, during which it became obvious to me that what he was there for was to tell me that my presence, continued presence as chairman and CEO of Chrysler, was going to be very damaging to our ability to get this loan agreement passed through Congress, because I represented the old management, and there had been a lot of criticism coming out of even the Carter administration, higher-level people at administration, criticizing the old management of Chrysler. So I decided we'd have a new management in Chrysler. I would resign, I'd retire. That would remove the problem. Because the main job, the main purpose, the greatest duty of a CEO is to assure the continuity of his company. And for me, that was duty. And I felt that that's the only thing I could do. And I resigned, and as a result, Lee took over and the loan went through.
We're talking to John Ricardo, and I'm Jack Crisula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Now back to Anything is Possible with Jack Krasula, sponsored by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back. We're with John Ricardo. John, a lot of people, when they talk about you, use the word courageous. What's courage mean to you?
I think the best definition I could give you for that is not original. It comes from a very famous author who's just deceased, by the name of Joseph Piper, who said that courage was falling in battle for the right cause. The company had to be saved, and if it required the sacrifice of my leaving, then it was worth it, and it was the right cause.
A lot of people in business today are trying to balance having a successful business career with raising a family. Tough to do. What advice would you give them?
Well, I think the advice I'd give them is the advice I took for myself. Before I started in business, I set for myself some priorities, and I tried to live up to them as well as I could. The priorities were as follows. I put God first. I put my family next. And my company came third. That didn't mean I worked any less hard for the company, but I tried to balance it in that order. Now, there were times maybe when I shaved the priorities a little bit, but they were always I would go back to the original priorities. And as long as I kept that in order, I was on the right track. And I would test it every now and then by asking my wife. I've asked her a number of times, what kind of a father and husband am I? And she would always give me encouraging reports. And I felt that I was on the right track.
Can you share with us the story of when your family found that you were going to become the president of Chrysler?
Well, the only one that knew about it ahead of time was my wife. I didn't know about it until 2 or 3 days before the board of directors approved it. So I obviously told her and told her just to keep it under her hat and not tell the kids and let it come out. Well, the kids found out about it during the day and before I got home, including my 11-year-old son and my 5-year-old son. Well, when I got home, the girls were just, oh, golly, so excited, so just dancing up and down and hugging me and kissing me and my son, my 11-year-old son also, and told my 5-year-old son, John, who's now a priest, we had just started a couple of weeks before to play with a steam engine that we used to boil some water, pour it in there, and then the steam engine would work by itself. And he stood it for as long as he could, and he finally put his hands on his hips and came up to me and said, Dad, when are we going to start playing with the steam engine? And that was the end of the party.
We're talking to John Ricardo. I'm Jack Krasula. This is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Once again, here's your host, Jack Krasula.
Welcome back. We're with John Ricardo, who hasn't given a speech for 27 years, but this coming Saturday is giving a keynote speech at a Catholic conference for men entitled Courageous Companions of Christ. John, why now after 27 years?
Well, this conference is the fifth annual meeting, and it's my son was instrumental in getting it started. And the purpose of it is to help young men and older men, whatever, it's just for men only, to become better fathers and better husbands. It's what I believe in, because I've always tried to model my life to be a good husband and a good father. I've attended all of them, never dreaming that I would one day be making a speech to them. But I was asked by the MC for this event, and my first reaction was to say no, but I called my son to make sure that he wanted me to do this. He said, absolutely, I want you to do this. So I said, well, if you want me to do it, I'll do it, because I believe in the conference and I believe in what you're doing. And I like the theme of this meeting, which is Courageous Companions in Christ. So I had started thinking about what I would speak about, because I hadn't written a speech ever in my life, because I used to have a PR department would do that. I obviously would tell them what I wanted to talk about, give them the ideas, and then read it and change it and do have them refine it. But two thoughts came into my mind very quickly. The first one was, why that was on my mind at that particular time, I'm not sure, but it was, there was a need, I thought, to explain and talk about to the group by someone who'd been in business to this group, that does God really speak to us? Does he listen to us? And at one point, I thought maybe that would be the basis of my talk. But I quickly realized that I ought to combine that with something else that would really speak to them, where they could feel that they were listening to someone who might be sharing something that they're sharing now, who had shared what they were sharing today. And so I told them about my priorities, putting God first, putting family second, and putting the company third. And then I thought I would meld the speech woven around those two ideas. And I found that I sat down and I wrote the whole speech in about 4 hours. Very rough draft, which I've changed a number of times, but the guts of the speech were written in the first 4 hours. And it was very easy to do because the two ideas for me went together very well. They melded beautifully together. My hope was that by speaking, I might be able to help someone out in the audience, because there are probably many there who work in the automotive industry or automotive suppliers or dealerships or even industries that maybe aren't related to the automotive industry but maybe in difficulty. And with the crises that I had gone through myself, I might be able to help build up their courage to stay with it and not give up.
The seminar, the conference is this Saturday, UAD Mercy, Callahan Hall. What would you say to a listener tonight who said, there's no hope for me, John. I've done it all. I've cheated, I've stolen, I've lied. Why should I go?
Yeah. That reminds me of a story of St. Teresa the Little Flower, who used to say she watched people that were coming out of confession, and she would simply tell them, begin again, start over. So what? All right, the past is past. The important thing is what you do from this point forward. And so I would tell them, don't give up. Set your sights, set them high, and try to follow them. And don't get discouraged.
What would you say to a wife or a mom listening tonight who says, man, I'd love to have my husband, I'd love to have my sons go, they don't want to go? John, how should I try to get them to go?
Well, hopefully some of them might be listening to this radio show that we're on, and maybe they'll read the Michigan Catholic and some other publicity that's been put out. And hopefully the men will read it too, and so that they will maybe get, with the help of God, get the feeling that they ought to go. They ought to try to listen to this thing. Maybe there's hope for them. They couldn't lose anything except 5 or 6 hours of a time on a Saturday. And so hopefully that would do the trick.
What does surrendering to God mean to you, John Ricardo?
Well, it just means following what you believe his will to be. And but you, in order to do that, you've got to be familiar with what he says. And you don't do that unless you know what he has said. And you do that by reading scripture, which is something I've done for years. It's the only way that I know that you can find out what God really expects of you and what he expects you to do. Anyone who has not read scripture ought to start doing so, because that's the only way you're going to find out what God wants.
When I say the Our Father, not my will but thine be done, it's very easy for me to ask God for what I want. Much, much harder for me to ask and be open to what he wants. Do you fight with that? Do you struggle with that?
Well, sure, we all do. That's natural. We're human. We're all prone to make mistakes, and we all have fears and anxieties. But this thing doesn't happen overnight. You got to build trust with God just like you build trust with a friend. You meet someone for the first time, it looks good, relationship seems to be fine, or if you maybe meet a woman you want to think might be your wife, you might think that's going to work out. You got to do more than that. You got to stay with it. You got to learn more. You got to go with them. I take my example of my relationship with my wife, We dated for over 3 years. We got to know each other very, very well. I never proposed to her. We didn't have to. We both just knew that we were meant for each other. We trusted each other. And that trust is proved by the fact that we've been married for 56 years and never have been any doubts in our mind that we were going to stay together.
In your business career, you had a lot of people let you down. People lied to you. They stole from you. How did you forgive people?
Well, that's not always easy. But you have to remember that we have a merciful God, and when you forgive, it doesn't mean that you have to go back and be buddy-buddy with these people. You just let it go and don't worry about it anymore, because you can't do anything about the past. It's gone. But if you say the Our Father often enough and you listen to what you're saying, there's no way you cannot. How can you expect to receive mercy from God unless you forgive others?
We're talking to John Ricardo. His speech that he's giving is this coming Saturday. If you want to learn more, go to www.mensfellowship.com or else call 734-459-9558. I'm Jack Prasula. This is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything is Possible with Jack Prasula, sponsored by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back. We're with John Ricardo, the former president and chairman of Chrysler. John, who are your heroes?
Oh, it depends on what you mean by heroes. There are a lot of people that I really admire, and I suppose you could call them heroes. But, for example, I've always admired very highly Harry Truman. So I thought he had guts. He never passed the buck. He was able to make decisions, follow his convictions. Ronald Reagan would be in the classification, I suppose, of a hero. John Paul II, for sure, would be a hero. But the greatest hero, I think, are my mom and dad. Here they came over to the States without any English, not knowing the culture, not knowing what they were going to face, yet willing to do that, raise a family, sacrifice for them. Everything was for the kids, very little for themselves, always make sure that the kids had what they needed. We lived through the Depression. We were what we would call today a poor family. I never knew I was poor. And they were the kinds of people, obviously, that helped build America, make them strong, make the country they are today. So I think if you're going to ask for who my greatest heroes are, my own mom and dad.
Your youngest son is a priest. What has he taught you?
Well, he taught me the meaning of faithfulness, you know, that God is a merciful God, but most of all, God is faithful. He will not let you down. Sure, we're going to go through troubles, and we're all going to have problems. But if you believe in him, in the end, it'll all turn out, because none of us are going to live forever. We're all going to have to die someday, and if you don't believe in an afterlife, it's going to be a miserable life for you, I'm afraid. But if you believe that there is, and you believe in God, I think, and when I listen to his homilies, we're always attuned to how merciful God really is, what Jesus did for us by dying on the cross, and how important it really is to understand that that is what sacrifice really is. And I think that message comes through so clearly from him.
A few years ago, I asked you to give me your philosophy of life. This is what you wrote. You said that it's one of your favorite passages is from the prophet Micah, chapter 6, verse 8. What is good has been explained to you, man. This is what Yahweh asks of you, only this, to act justly, to love tenderly, and to walk humbly with your God.
I don't know how you can say more succinctly what the philosophy of life ought to be. It's there, I think. In fact, I like it so much that I've instructed my wife if I should predecease her, and I've got it written down, so if she dies before I do, that whoever's left in the family would have that read at my, as one of the readings at my funeral, because I just don't know how you can say it any better. If you live that way, There's no reason to worry.
Speaking of your wife, Thelma, of 56 years, what words did you say to her at the wedding?
I do. And we didn't say very much because we didn't have to. We had said it pretty much all the period of dating that we do. And we had our own covenant. We remember very well the exhortation that was read to us at our wedding ceremony. They don't use it anymore, although I think my son uses it. In that exhortation, there's a quotation that we remember, but not only we, but all our children and our grandchildren, because every anniversary that we celebrate, we say it, and the kids know it by heart. Sacrifice is often irksome and difficult. Only love can make it easy, and perfect love can make it a joy. My wife today can hardly get around. A woman who just 5 or 6 years ago would walk 10 to 12 miles a day, today walks with a cane, with her head bent forward, who can hardly get around, who is as cheerful as she can possibly be. This is a result of osteoporosis and any number of falls and any number of operations. She cheers people up. When you call her on the phone, you wouldn't have unless you knew her or saw her, you wouldn't have any idea what she's suffering. Never complains. And so how can you not love a person like that? And I just can't express my love for her any more than I can right now. That I admire her just so much for what she's gone through and what she means and how much I would miss her if she weren't there.
What would you say to a listener tonight who's old and frail, who says, John, I just want to go. I just want to die.
Well, I just tell them to wait. It's going to happen, but don't force it and have hope. I don't know how, you know, I could convince them, but just to tell them that life is worth living, and even though you're suffering, God is faithful, and follow the rules that you can read in Scripture. You're gonna be okay. It may not be good here, but it will be later. Paul has very good phrases for that. Eye is not seen, ear is not heard, but God is waiting for us when we die.
One thing I've learned from your son, Father John Ricardo, is he always talks about that the real championship is in the next life, not in this life. What do you say about that?
I say that I believe it. And that's why I've learned from him. You asked me before what I learned from him. One of the things I learned from him was not to get so head up about a ball game. And I'm a great sports fan, Michigan fan, basketball, football. And there was a time when if they lost, it would take me weeks to get over it. That doesn't happen anymore. Oh, yeah, I don't like it. I regret it. But it's just one event which will pass away and let it go.
Faith has been huge in your life. You go to Mass every day. What do you say to somebody who says, I just don't have time in my life to practice right now?
I don't believe that. Because there's 24 hours in a day, and there's lots of time. You got to learn how to prioritize it, make time.
Last question. What advice would you give to our young listeners tonight?
I would tell them that life can be beautiful, but you have to contribute to it. You have to make it happen. You have to have faith and not give up, and just keep on hoping. Hope is a great virtue, and if you believe enough, life can be beautiful.
John Ricardo, thanks for doing this. Thanks for coming on. Thanks for the way you've lived your life these 83 years. It's an honor to have you. Our guest next Sunday will be America's greatest young violinist, Elena Urieste. I'm Jack Crisula. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spohem.
Believe in yourself.